This week's episode is brought to you by The Crazy Taco.
Take it from me, The Crazy Taco! You won't find a crazier taco than the ones you'll find at The Crazy Taco! Remember, our drive-thru's open all night! Sweet up a chili bean, I'm crazy!
On second thought, maybe don't go to The Crazy Taco. Let's just go ahead and start the show.
Nick, 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 Nick.
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Studios in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Hector Navarro, and my guest today is one of the most unique voices in animation, who is known for creating a little cartoon show thing called Invader Zim. The series has an incredibly passionate fan base, and it has become the definition of a cartoon cult classic. Of course, I'm talking about Jonan Vasquez. Yes, of course, I plan to talk with Jonan about the Invader Zim TV series and the comics, too, but I also plan to talk with him about something that I did not know, and that is Jonan's love for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the hilarious new Turtles animated short film that he wrote and produced and had its world premiere at Comic-Con this summer. So come on, join me as I walk around in the brain of Jonan Vasquez. Was it about the Turtles comics? Because you talked about this a little bit before. You know, you were coming up and you were looking at comic books and superhero stuff, and then you get Turtles in your hands, and they're like,
Turtles
in your hands, and they're different, and they're grimy.
Yeah.
What was it about those comics?
I think, like a lot of kids, there were just a bunch of things that naturally just came my way, and you just kind of by default had to like them. Cartoons, comic books, any sort of escapist fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. But most of the comic book stuff I got secondhand through my brother, who was really into, you know, DC and mm-hmm. Marvel and just, you know, I read that stuff just because, look, there's a guy who can shoot lightning from his hands, or there's a guy who can run really fast, and like, it's like, yeah, I'm a kid, I like this stuff. It wasn't until he started collecting the Turtles comics. Like, he got the original run, the black and white, you know, Eastman and Laird stuff, and it just did something to my little kid brain where I'm just like, I think this means more to me.
Yeah.
It showed me that there were people who were, you know, it had the look. They were turtles. It was still silly.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel so, I mean, as a kid, it seems weird to think that, but it didn't seem so simple. There was something else to it.
Yeah.
You know, looking back at it now, it does seem incredibly simple.
Yeah.
But it was exciting. It was exciting to see these, like, silly little turtles. It'd be like seeing, you know, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck mm-hmm. covered in scars and just throwing each other off rooftops and just hitting each other with, you know, katanas. And it was weird. It was really weird for me I couldn't quite figure it out. Like, I grew up with, you know, the usual, you know, being taken to, like, Disney movies and going to see blah, blah, you know. And mm-hmm. I liked it. I liked that stuff. I just, mm-hmm. I loved just anything that wasn't real. Mm-hmm. But then I would see, you know, like a Ralph Bakshi animation or weird 70s, sort of early 80s animation like Flight of Dragons, things that were not Disney, you know, Plague Dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
My sister took me to go see Alien when I was really, really tiny.
And there it is. That explains a lot of Jonan Vasquez. It's awesome.
Like, I don't know that, like...
Wow.
Yeah. It seems incredibly irresponsible.
Aliens or Alien?
Alien.
Wow. That's terrifying.
Well, I was obsessed with it, though.
Yeah.
After that, I got weirdly, almost fetishistically obsessed with Parasites. And we would go to my dad's friend's house, and he had a son who was older than me. He was mm-hmm. like a teenager at that point, and he had an Alien making of book. And I would always harass him. You know, I was probably around like, you know, 9 or 10, and be like, let me see the book. Let me see the book.
Yeah.
You know? And I would just always open it up to the page where the chest burster is coming out of Kane's chest, and I would just stare at it. I would just be, it would make me uncomfortable, but I loved being uncomfortable staring at this thing because the guy looked like he looked like he was in hell. Like, he wasn't happy. This was clearly someone that was suffering, but I knew at the same time, this is fake.
Right.
And that there are people whose job it is to make people uncomfortable, and the feeling I'm feeling right now is their success.
Yeah.
You know? And I loved that. I absolutely loved the idea that there were people who devoted their lives to horrific things.
Mm-hmm. And this was pre-internet. You found this book. That's a big deal.
Oh yeah. It was hard to, that's what it was. When you didn't have, it's not like I could just be like, I feel like looking at someone's bloody corpse, you know, and then I just Googled bloody corpses. You had to find stuff. You had to like really hunt stuff down. And when you weren't in the presence of it, you were thinking of it. You're like, I can't wait to see that.
Let's go back a little bit. Was there a specific moment that clicked in your head as a young man where you were like, I can tell stories using art?
Even if I didn't think I was going to grow up to do this as a, you know, I just loved telling stories. Mm-hmm. I think that I just, most of my life, I think like a lot of kids, I think growing up, like in school, I was like, I can't wait until, it wasn't that I was opposed to learning, it was how I was learning. Mm-hmm. It was how engaged I was with the lesson, for the moment, or just how it was being presented. I always felt like there was a better way. There was a better way to do this. There was, I knew what I responded to, and that was, you know, storytelling, gaming, and, you know, just movies and stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't interesting to me to just be told information and be expected to memorize it and then feed it back. It meant nothing to me.
Yeah.
You know? So I think I was sort of disgruntled a lot of the time. And through being dissatisfied, through being unhappy with how things were, then you were like, here's how it should be.
Yeah.
Or here's what it would be like if it were worse as I got older.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the storytelling for me, like, growing up was very escapist. And then as I got older, as you get older, when you're a little kid, when you're younger, you think, how cool is it going to be when this happens to me? Because it's coming. You're going to do it. You have all the time in the world. You're like, I am going to have this adventure. I'm going to go to space. And then as you get older, you're like, I'm probably never going to go to space. So you start writing stories about people that go to space and they hate it.
Yeah.
You know? And you're like, oh, I have to make this entertaining, though. I want this person to be in hell for getting to live the wish that I never got. But, you know, I'm gonna make them regret it. But it's fun.
You're a young comics creator, you're doing it. And then you described how there was a moment where you were able to quit your day job.
Yeah.
What was that moment like?
It was incredible. I was cruising around in my brand new Dodge Neon.
Yes.
that I bought with comic book money.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I was working, at this place that had just started selling DVDs, and we were like this sort of state-of-the-art home entertainment store at the time. I remember just, how nice it felt to quit. I just hated helping people. I hated being asked, you know, excuse me, can you, and I just be like, oh. I was literally that guy that they make fun of, except it wasn't a music store. It was a DVD store.
Yeah.
And I just be like, oh, leave me alone. And I threw it replaced day job, money, basically. I wasn't like living large, but I was able to sort of sustain myself. You make stuff up and you go, I hope people literally buy it.
Yeah.
And it worked out and I was so happy. It was probably, I have a greater memory of seeing my comics on a shelf amongst other comics that I myself liked.
Yeah.
I have probably greater memories of that than anything else that I've done. It's always cool to see something that I've done come out now. But
sure.
You know, I think I...
That must have been wild, seeing
it. It was, and it was... Because it was so intimate. I think it was... It's weirder seeing something on TV or seeing something... Mm-hmm. It's just more surreal. I can't quite get a grasp on, like, how many people are seeing this thing.
Yeah.
But with comics, back then, it was nice just because people had to go and look for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you said, like, the internet was...
Yeah.
So much of a thing. It was by the time that I was doing comics, but it wasn't the internet that it is now.
Correct.
And there was something about knowing that people had to search for you.
What did you want Invader Zim to be? What were you thinking? This is what I want this cartoon to be going into it in the beginning.
I don't know that there was any like super conscious decision to make it a particular thing other than it was going to be more of the kind of thing that I do, you know?
Which is very funny.
Yeah, I knew that it was going to, you know, there were going to be aliens and robots and just throw everything in that I, you know, was obsessed with.
Yeah.
And it just turned into Zim. It popped up real fast. The idea, the thinking was, I don't want to adapt anything that I've already done. Not that that would have made any sense. Like, I think there was kind of like a tension on Squee because mm-hmm. it could be a kid's thing, but it definitely wasn't. So I figured I would do something that I would not care about as much. I'll just make something up and see how that goes.
New thing, yeah.
And that never works out because, you know, the more time I spend, you know, thinking about something and developing something, you know, you start to love it. You start to care, and suddenly you've got a thing that, regardless of how it goes, you're attached to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just knew that it was going to be kind of relentless. And I think that that kind of describes the show, good or bad. It's relentless.
Absolutely. You've also described the show as being full of sarcasm,
oh, yeah.
cruelty, and violence, which
yes.
I think is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of when there was any genuine affection mm-hmm. in the show. I'm not saying that's a good thing. Like, if I went back and if I were, I think, it, you know, I'd have trouble doing something that was that concentrated evil,
yeah.
nonstop. You have to, like, even in the comic.
Yeah.
In the comic, we've eased up on just how relentlessly mean it is, but in aid of the cruelty. Like,
yes.
there has to be niceness. There have to be family moments. Like, Professor Membrane is not as neglectful. Like, in the show, he just was horrible.
Yeah.
Like, recorded messages saying, you know, I love you, son.
Yeah.
And not, there's never any actual warmth between characters.
Yeah.
But in the comic, we have these hints of, you know, the family spends time together.
That's
you
great.
Know, Dib and Gaz are not the same as Zim and Dib. They are brother and sister. They actually are, you know, brother and sister. They have to act like it.
Yes.
And that sometimes means doing something nice, but always as a precursor to something horrible.
Son, you're looking in good spirits today. You must have finally seen the light about studying real science.
No, Dad. These alien shoes came into my room and gave me some kind of gift. I know how that sounds, but it's true.
Those aliens were demented hallucinations, but your DNA does seem to have evolved beyond that of normal human beings.
I guess I'm sorry about being so mean to you all those times then.
This is just incredible. I should see if this whatever it is really will help me deal with Zim. I'm gonna head over to his base. Hey, I'm speaking out loud to myself in an unnatural manner. Oh well.
I hail you!
Did you want to be a voice actor when you were a kid?
No.
How did that happen? You did voices on Invader Zim, in case people aren't aware. You did Zim's computer. You did Old Kid.
Yeah.
Mini Moose. Where did that kind of come about? Where did that idea come in?
Just kind of necessity at the time. And also, it's just fun. I just didn't, growing up, never thought, I'm going to be a voice actor.
Right.
But, you know, when we're recording stuff, yeah, I'm going to step up to the mic literally and just, you know, especially stuff like Mini Moose, where it doesn't sound like me. It doesn't, it's just a, you know, it's,
yeah.
And it's like, well, there you go. You know, pay me. And I'm not going to hire someone to come in and make a squeaking sound.
Yeah.
But the computer is, you know, it's usually all stuff that's really distorted, mm-hmm. except for Old Kid.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I look back at Old Kid and I think, I hate that voice. I would have gotten someone else to just be Old Kid. Anytime that there's a chance of sort of appearing and not necessarily being me sounding like me,
right.
It was, you know, kind of just like, yeah, I'll do that. If it's a robot voice that you're going to then pitch, like I was pitched way down for the computer voice.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff was fun. But I haven't really done any voice acting. I did some on a pilot that I was working on for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I listen to it and I'm like, let's get.
Yeah.
Then I'll play that for the actual person.
Sure.
I'm like, just kind of do an impersonation of me if I were a good voice actor.
Yeah. You
know? Object not compatible with temporal field.
Oh, not compatible? Is this thing just completely useless? Not compatible.
Object accepted. Temporal displacement in process.
Huh?
Another thing you've said, Jonan, is that in your head, that the story of Invader Zim and these characters, it never ended. So when people have been asking, what happened to these characters? What happens next? And to you in your head, it's continually going. And then you have to tell everybody, oh, I forget that you guys are not in my head. Was that one of the reasons that you were excited about coming back to do the comic book series?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because I knew that we had gotten better. All of us had, you know, you can't get worse, but I can think of some things that are just getting worse and worse. I think that we were just had more experience. Aaron had been, you know, he hasn't stopped drawing since the show. He's got his comics and he's, you know, it was this perfect fusion of our abilities.
This is Aaron Aleksevich, right?
Aaron Aleksevich, yeah.
Killing it. So good, yeah.
He was an incredible find on the show, and he was a great... I love that he was willing to work on the comic, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. It's monthly. There's just so much love put into it, and that's... Again, it's that... It's like what we were talking about before. It was important. Like, I didn't have to work on it. They didn't have to... tell me that they were going to do it.
Yeah.
It was like great. They were incredibly respectful of our wishes. Like, and Oni came to us, Oni Press, mm-hmm. and they came to me and asked if, you know, how would you feel if we went to Nickelodeon and proposed this comic series? And I was like, that sounds cool, you know?
Did you think it was going to happen, or were you just kind of like, we'll see?
I didn't know. Yeah. I was so used to Zim kind of getting the shaft in a lot of ways, you know, kind of like being the ugly stepchild.
It's always been the underdog. It's always been, you know, like you said, the lesser at the kids' table kind of
yeah.
a thing. It's, yeah.
But, you know, time kind of proved that if it was going to be at the kids' table, it mm-hmm. was like this hideous, immortal kid that would never leave the table. You know, while new kids came, there was yeah. just still this kid there that was just like, I'm still eating. And it didn't go away. And the fact that the comic is even doing as well as it is, it's just, mm-hmm. it never ceases to amaze me. I love it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the greatest compliment to a thing that we did, you know, for us, like, forever ago.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who don't know when it went off the air. They think it's still like a new thing.
Yeah.
That seems to be how my stuff exists. Comics, like there are people who still buy the comics that I did before Zim.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know how old it is. You know, they think I'm still like some, you know, 19-year-old kid drawing comics. The comic popped up and it was an opportunity to kind of, show people where the show and where our humor is mm-hmm. now versus, because mm-hmm. I don't think that the comic sounds exactly like the cartoon.
The cartoon
is way less focused.
Yeah.
It is way less focused. And the comic is still, you know, just mayhem, but it's not just us putting stuff in because we think it's going to be funny regardless of whether or not it makes sense for the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's just better. Yeah. It's better. There's less of a filter, too, between when we have an idea and it ending up on the page.
Totally.
Because there's such a compressed timeline. You have a month. You have, like, a joke. You come up with, you know, you're writing, we're laughing, or, you know, we usually, like, Eric Trueheart, one of the writers
mm-hmm.
who works on the comic and worked on the cartoon, too. We'll meet up, we'll pitch some ideas, and then we go off. He'll usually write the scripts. I write a script every now and then. And you have an idea that you think is funny, and then in a month, it's on paper.
Yeah.
And people are responding to it. They're liking it or they're not liking it. You get people going, I love that bit when Zim did this or whatever, and you're like, yeah, it worked out.
Yeah.
Versus having a joke, coming up with an idea, and then a year later.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, I like that part, when and you're like, I don't want to hear about that part anymore because I've lived with that. It's like, I'm so sick of it. Yeah, animation just...
Yeah.
It's not for the impatient.
Yeah.
And I'm really impatient.
Where did the idea for Gurr come from?
This is kind of like a very common answer for me. I don't think that there was like a, and then there's got to be this character.
Right.
I just knew that he was going to have a robot sidekick that was dumb. somehow dumber than the main character.
Yeah.
A lot of it came from Ricky, who ended up being the voice actor,
mm-hmm.
Ricky Simons. A lot of that is just the personality mixed with just things that I think are funny, which are, in a lot of ways, Gurr was sort of this extension of Happy Noodle Boy, which was a character that was just nonsense. It made no sense. It was a character that was designed to make no sense. And Gurr just really doesn't make sense unless you, you know, remember that he's broken. And that excused him for everything.
Yeah.
He's broken. Every invader gets this sort of robot henchman.
Yeah.
And everything that Zim has is broken. His computer is broken, his ship, his robot. It's not like every invader out there has this experience. It's mm-hmm. not like everyone has a Gurr. Their robots are probably boring. They're just, you know, they function. Zim's has to stand out. His is broken, so mm-hmm. he can't really be doing a good job. He can never do a good job.
Yeah.
Gurr can't ever do a good job. And Ricky came in and wasn't a voice actor. Ricky was not a voice actor, and I like that. We had people come in and audition for Gurr, and everyone was just kind of doing this standard crazy voice. Oh, hey, I'm a robot. Oh. It's like,
right.
It was just like, it was just grating to my ears. I didn't like that there was this, oh, you want this? I got what you need. Kind of like there's just this stock voice that people would do for crazy robot. Ricky came in and didn't know. He didn't have any like storehouse of here's my voices. He just did Ricky, and Ricky's just kind of a weirdo on his own. He sounded, it sounds weird to say now, but I liked Ricky because he was bad. He was bad at it, you know? And that worked. It was perfect for Gurr. It sounded off. And then once you pitch it up and make it even weirder, then it was just, yeah, it was adorable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like, it's a broken character. Let's get a broken person.
Gurr, remember with your brains, you must behave like a human dog monster. Do you understand?
I really don't.
Gurr, human dogs don't speak. Now go answer the door.
I like working with people
mm-hmm.
in the right situation and certain people mm-hmm. and only on Tuesdays.
Very specific.
Yeah.
Very.
No, but I do like when it works out, when you have a team that, you know, I left Zim with kind of a very small list of people that I would always go back to.
Mm-hmm.
I would always go back to, you know, I met Brian there, Konietzko,
mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Graham, Trueheart, Aaron Alexievich, just, you know, there are people who I would, anytime something comes up and I need a team of people, I go to them first. And they're so talented, and time has passed. They're usually busy, and I get angry because, you know, I want to work with them.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, they've been recognized for their powers, so it's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of them kind of got their start on Zim. Like, when I first started Zim, I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
I wasn't from animation. I
right.
didn't come from this place where I'm like, I know how this is going to work out, and I know who I want to bring in. I want this guy and this guy. I was kind of assigned a lot of people, and some of them worked out, some of them didn't, but it was never an easy process. It was always me asking, like, is this how it's supposed to be? Is this working? I don't think this is working.
Yeah.
It's stressful. It was really stressful. I was, when I first started working on the pilot, I was like 22.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I didn't go in like worried, which was probably one of the best things for me, because I didn't think about it. I went in going, yeah, I'm going to make a cartoon now. Let's do this. People ask me a lot of the time, you know, it's weird. They ask me, you know, they want to get into animation. They're like, how do I get into that? I'm like, I don't know. you just do it. You just go. I just went in and I knew what I wanted to make. I knew I wasn't going to be one of these people who, I wasn't as aware of back then. I thought this is just how you make cartoons. But now I know there are people who will just pitch a show and they're like, yeah, there's the dog. And he's like, half of his body is a robot, you know, make it. And then they leave and they're just idea factories. And I knew from the beginning, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to do everything, even though that's not smart. I learned that's not smart. That's why working with people that you trust, again, is super important. This guy's working with people that are better than you. make this better than what I can make it,
yeah.
You know, is super important.
That's great advice. That's, yeah.
Yes, always yeah. work with people. No, you're never going to be the most talented person in the room. Get more talented people. And then people see the thing and then they think you did it.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, thank you. Yes, I did. I did an amazing thing.
I'll take that credit. That's yeah. great. So there's been rumors, Jonan, there's been rumors that there's a chance that you might return to the Invader Zim world via animation. What can you tell us?
That rumor has been going around since, I wouldn't say since the show got canceled, but it's been a part of my life for about, I don't know, like a decade now.
Yeah.
About a decade. And anytime there's interest in Zim, like now with the comics, mm-hmm. or anytime that there's like a marathon on Nicktoons or whatever, it's just like Twitter, there's people just keep asking about, like, oh, it's definitely coming back, right? I hear it's coming back. Or if we buy this number of comics, that will bring the show back. If they care enough, mm-hmm. it would come back. But clearly, they haven't cared enough.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So care more, guys.
They're failing.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
I just want people to know that they're failing.
Yeah. If there's one takeaway from this interview, is that fans, especially Invader Zim fans, you guys really pick up the pace. Come on, let's pick it up. Let's do a better job of loving the thing you love.
You're letting us down.
All of those things lend little pieces to make Invader Zim what it is, and it's become the sort of cult classic, which is kind of crazy. What has been your reaction to how people continue to discover it?
Like I said, it's very flattering, but it's also just surreal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just like, you think that something would like run its course after a certain point, but I think that's the internet, you know? It doesn't mm-hmm. really let things die. Things just sort of stick around like mines, and someone steps on it eventually, and then they spread it. Not so much like mines, more like some kind of like a plague, you know. And they carry it to their friends, and mm-hmm. yeah, I don't really have any clear idea of what the audience is at this point, because mm-hmm. when I go to conventions and people show up, it's all kinds of people.
Wow,
you know, I love when it's like some grandma comes up, and it's not just for her kids and her kids' kids. It's for this person, that watches the show with her kids, with her grandchildren.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is crazy. You know, most of the stuff, well, comics usually, but, you know, animation is still pretty isolated. I don't interact with people outside of, you know, the job
mm-hmm.
as much as I should. But then you get this sense of, oh my God, this is part of people's lives.
Yeah.
People watch the Christmas episode on Christmas. I don't even watch. I, you know, it's like it's crazy.
Wow.
And it's really nice to imagine. Like, I want to see it happening.
Yeah.
I hear them say it, and I still don't believe it. It's because I can't imagine that scene. It's like, it's Christmas time. Everyone gather around and watch, you know, Zim in a giant robot mech, you know, be blasted and have like what we called Christmas juice coming out of him. It's blood. But I think that's hilarious.
Went to do character designs on a show called Randy Cunningham Ninth Grade Ninja. What was that experience like, doing character designs for the show?
I had been in the middle of development on another series, mm-hmm. Pilot, and it was just, you know, it takes forever getting stuff made. And it had been a while since I'd really worked in animation. So when the guys over at Titmouse Animation, they were working with Disney to retool a show that had already been in development. I guess they had like character designs already.
Mm-hmm.
It needed redesigning, and they asked me if I wanted to do some stuff, and I'm like, I knew that it was actually getting made.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh look, I want to do something. I want to work on something while I'm doing this other thing that who knows where it's ever going to go.
Right.
And so I just got to draw some characters, which was great. You know, I designed some stuff, I did the main characters and I did some side characters and some creatures, mm-hmm. which was really fun. But I have kind of like this, there's sort of like this curse about having a look that is distinct mm-hmm. that I don't necessarily associate with being the only thing I do.
Right.
When people say, oh, look, I'm doing this like, you know, Zim style or Jonin style,
yeah.
I'll look at it and go like, I don't draw like that. Yeah. That's horrible. But Zim kind of locked me into this thing where like with the Randy Cunningham characters, they were probably a lot more rounded and smoother and just a little, you know, proportionally a little different than what people might be used to from Zim. Or I feel like they took the designs and, quote, corrected them to mm-hmm. make it look, oh, no, you seem to have made a mistake. You didn't draw them like you.
Yeah.
You
know?
So I think I'd probably want to be a bigger part of like maintaining the look that I wanted mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. kind of handing it off and having people go, here's what I think it should look like.
What was it like to work on that turtle short?
That was kind of a great experience. I mean, for one, it was turtles, and I never imagined I would have anything to do with it. I'm a fan,
yeah.
But I don't ever, you know, I didn't ever think I would be able to play with those characters in any kind of official capacity. Mm-hmm. So when the thing popped up, when they asked me, hey, do you want to do one of these shorts?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, I think I have the time. I think I can do it.
Yeah.
It was only mildly irresponsible because I was already, you know, steeped in another thing.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to do it. It sounded fun. It sounded like a great use of, you know, people that I knew and got to work with Eric Bauza and the Workaholics guys, which just
awesome.
Was weird. You know, it was just fun. It was just fun, which is
yeah.
refreshing. I don't think anything was that smooth ever.
That's awesome.
It turned out to be the thing I wanted to make from beginning to end. There wasn't really a lot of compromise.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. There was a little bit of compromise. I wanted it to be a lot more action. But
it was a pretty good amount of action in it. It was a pretty good amount.
Well, no, I think it was like some kind of budget thing.
Gotcha.
We were told the original idea had a lot more of the focus was a lot more on Donnie and Raphael fighting in their own particular ways. It wasn't as funny. Mm-hmm. It was just going to be kind of like this cool badass showcase for like, you know, I'm fighting you with, you know, all my tech.
Yeah.
And I'm just fighting you with my body, my highly trained body. I was told that for budget and time, it just, you know, that was going to be stretching it and it was just going to strain the budget too much.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up going with something funnier and something, you know, that didn't focus so much on the action. Mm-hmm. And it turned out, you know, I really like what we made. But then I saw one of the other shorts and I'm like, what the hell? It was all action. It was like CG and there's like chases and they're flying down to like, there's like a bus. And why did you tell me? Like, where did their money come from? Like, I'm not mad at it. I'm just more like, I wanted to make it. I wanted to make that.
Why are Raph and Donnie engaged in Mortal Kombat?
Well, you were in the bathroom, but Raph said that Donnie wouldn't need to waste his time inventing stuff to help him fight if he just focused on training more. And Donnie disagreed, then said something clever, and, well, you know how Raph gets. And then I said, man, Leo's been in the bathroom a long time, and that was weird because, really, like, how much can a turtle poop in?
Why are they fighting?
If I were to live out my dream, it would be the dream of doing the things that are in my own head and mm-hmm. getting as many of them out as possible. I don't want to. It'd be flattering if someone said, hey, we want you to work on the latest. I think of like on a much bigger scale, I think of people like Joss Whedon or Sam Raimi being asked to work on Spider-Man or, you know, the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, hey, good for those guys. They're getting, you know, they're getting some good attention. But at the same time, it's mm-hmm. heartbreaking because it's like, I don't want to see them work on this thing that it's just a machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be what it is regardless. And it's great when you get like a bit of personality, that thing that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
We were like, when you see you're watching The Avengers or Age of Ultron and you're like, oh, look, there's a little bit of Joss Whedon coming out
yeah.
there in this 3 hours of just meaninglessness. You know, I'm just like, I don't care. I don't care about what's happening in this. Mm-hmm. So if I were ever to work on something like that wasn't my own idea, mm-hmm. know, like making a remake of Little Shop of Horrors or something like that, not that I would want to, because I love Little Shop of Horrors, but you know, if someone said, hey, we're making Little Shop of Horrors and we want you to work on it, or if someone said, hey, we're making Ghostbusters again, mm-hmm. not that they would do that, mm-hmm. You know, do you want to work on it? I'd be like, yeah, but I don't want to listen to you though.
Yeah.
I want to make it, but I don't want for it to have to hit these marks right. that, you know, are guaranteed to make the audience happy. It's like, I'm just not interested in that. That's just death to me.
Well, what about working on something that is your own idea? Is there a different medium that you haven't attacked yet? Maybe video games?
I'd love
games?
To do live action stuff.
Oh, and awesome.
Live action, video games. I'd love to do VR stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
Just alternate means of storytelling. And that's one of the newest. It's just exciting to me. Actually caring about what you're doing. You know,
yes.
I never want to get to the point where I'm like, I have to do this.
Right.
I have to. But sometimes you do. There's nothing wrong with that. But I then have to find a place where it makes sense to me to work on it. Like, I'm working on this thing that it wasn't my choice to begin with, but mm-hmm. I'm going to make it something hopefully, you know, different. When I go into a pitch or when things are moving along and it looks like, oh, they seem interested, I always have to remind people, like, I'm not here to guarantee you a hit.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst attitude to have. Making something because you want it to be a hit, that's the start of things going bad. I think some of the most interesting stories are the ones that no one asked for.
Absolutely.
Where you didn't expect for, like, I didn't yeah. think that this could be fascinating or, you know, or what it is, but hopefully it's something that I didn't expect for someone to do that ends up being entertaining. So when I go in and I do these pitches and tell people, I'm not, you know, I don't, this could be a hideous disaster, but my goal is for, if it's a disaster, I hope it's a memorable disaster
yeah.
versus a forgettable, just thing.
Yeah. Well, at least you gave them fair warning. And I think that's all you can ask for,
yeah.
Jonan. I think people are always going to be asking for more just because they like your perspective and point of view, and it was memorable, and it was not meh, as you said. So thank you so much.
It was, I think I said schmeh.
Schmeh. It was not yeah. schmeh. It was memorable, man. So thank you
thank
so
you
much
very
for coming
much.
In and talking to us, Jonan Vasquez. So appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
I hope that you guys enjoyed walking around in Jonan's brain as much as I did. And if you haven't already, go online and check out his Ninja Turtle short titled Don vs. Raph. It's funny, it's action-packed, and it's everything you can want from Jonan and the Turtles. There's a link to it on nickanimationpodcast.com as well as some original art from Invader Zim. So go check it out. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by
Jonathan Highlander,
Dana Vasquez-Eberhardt,
Kelly Smith,
Andrew Huebner.
Original music by Useful Creature. All of the incredible social media for our podcast is made by
Narbe Manassians, Greg Nix.
And thanks to the man who works the controls and makes me sound better than I have a right to,
Manny Grauba.
Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons.